Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Bride to the Fiend Prince by Rebecca F. Kenny, narrated by Lulu Russell. Triggering content warnings are available on the author's website, rfkenny.wixsite.com/Rebecca F. Kenny Books. 1. Papa always promised he would let me marry for love. He said it over and over throughout my growing up years. Even if I can do nothing else for you, Amarilla, I will do this. I will allow you to choose your husband. I don't know why I believed him. He had broken a million promises to me before. Little ones, like not coming to the tea parties I set out for him, or skipping my bedtime kiss, or attending a meeting instead of my birthday celebration. He was the king, after all. A busy man who could not be expected to have time for one tiny daughter. With all those broken promises lying fragmented in my heart, the final and most terrible betrayal should not have come as a surprise. But it did, because he had promised that one thing to me for so many years, that my marriage would be my choice. I had intended to test him on it. I tried very hard to fall in love with the muscled stable boy who groomed my horse, so I could find out if my father truly meant it when he said I could have my heart's choice. But the stable boy was so very dull. When I tried to talk to him, he only stared with a vacant sort of smile and made one-word answers. So I'd given up on that test of my father's promise. But I still believed in it. My father ate dinner with me that fateful evening. Eating a meal with him was a rare and wonderful occurrence, and I was too delighted to question it. I sipped the fancy foreign tea he'd handed me, and smiled at him across our plates of roast pork, tomatoes, mushrooms, and greens. We talked of little things, of the new horses and the refurbishments to the East Wing, until I was halfway through my cup of tea and feeling oddly sleepy and detached. Perhaps I was more tired than I'd thought. Perhaps I should go to bed early. I blinked at my father, and my hands seemed to move in slow motion as I set down the cup. His voice seemed to come from a great distance.
Tonight, you will marry the Prince of Terralos.
The Prince of Terralos, I said distantly, with difficulty. The one they call a devil. A fiend. And I tried to laugh, because I thought he was joking. The laugh dribbled between my lips, and I pressed my hands to my eyes as the room swam before me.
It has all been settled. Your things are being packed, and your maids are here to prepare you.
He lifted his hand, signaling to someone behind me. The meaning of his words sifted through the haze in my mind. I struggled to think clearly, to process what was happening. My gaze dropped to the half-empty cup of tea. You drugged me.
I had no choice.
My father wore a pained expression.
We've been at war with two kingdoms for too long, with Terralars in the north and Ister to the west. The Terralonian forces have grown too vast and terrible to resist alone.
People are dying, Amarilla.
Our soldiers and the citizens of our border villages. I tried to make a treaty with Ister to gain them as our allies against Terralars, but they said no. To save lives, I had no choice but to give in to Terralars, to surrender. They will allow me to continue ruling, under supervision, if I make a grand gesture of loyalty. This is the only way, Amarilla. Don't you see? You will be saving thousands of lives by this sacrifice.
He sounded as if he might be on the verge of tears. Though with my brain dulled by the drug, I could not be sure. Honestly, I could barely understand what he said. I only knew that firm hands were gripping my arms, pulling me to my feet, dragging my leaden body along the palace corridors to my room.
My head lulled, and my eyelids drooped as I was sponged and coiffed, dressed in a beaded gown of white satin. My tongue and lips felt thick and swollen, and though I tried to speak, the words came out as unintelligible mumblings. Someone pushed open the door to my room.
The Terralonian sorcerer is here to take her.
I was propped on my feet and hustled from my chambers to my father's throne room. My father stood rigid, dressed in a crisp uniform draped in medals and chains. Under the freckles I'd inherited from him, he looked a shade paler than usual. With him stood several members of our court, and four strangers. Two Terralonian guards, the Terralonian ambassador, and a masked figure in flowing dark robes that pooled across the tiled floor. I blinked, trying to clear my head. The tea seemed to be wearing off.
No.
I shaped the word carefully, forced it out. My body lurched against the hands holding me, but the resistance was weak and ineffective.
They have said that I can come visit you.
My father's voice was a plea for forgiveness. I turned, met his eyes, and pushed out another word, full of hate and betrayal.
Don't!
My father stepped forward and embraced me anyway, and as he did, he whispered in my ear,
"Try to uncover the source of their magic."
I glared at him as he pulled away, as he made a great show of wiping his streaming eyes. Try to uncover the source of their magic. The words thrummed in my dizzy head as my guards handed me over to the Terralonian soldiers, and my trunks and satchels were piled around us. The masked sorcerer walked in a circle around our little group, green light zipping from his hands, forming a dome-like web of shining emerald lines. Then the sorcerer stepped into the dome with us and lifted both arms. A screaming, rushing wind raced around me, through me, dismantling my bones and skin, and I wanted to shriek, but I had no air. With a jerk that I felt in the pit of my being, I snapped back together, whole again, but my skin still crackled with the after effects of the traveling magic. We had spun through the air from place to place, transported in less than a minute. The web of green lines receded, melting into the glossy black lake of tiles on which I now stood. And by accident, or the sorcerer's malicious intent, none of my trunks or satchels had been brought along with us. I'd been exiled with nothing but the clothes I wore. Black pillars arched upward, so tall I could barely make out the ceiling overhead. Those black pillars were studded with glowing amber crystals, the only light in the cursed palace of Terralos. This cavernous place was to be my new home, and in a few moments, I would be married to the Fiend Prince.
2.
The drug my father had given me was wearing off. I only swayed a little as I walked through the vast dark halls of the cursed palace. I could probably run if I tried. But where would I go? Whole forests and mountain ranges lay between me and my home now. Terralonian sorcerers travelled by magic rarely, in times of great need or importance. It was unlikely I could find one willing to take me back home, even if I could give the slip to the grim-faced guards flanking me on either side, or the sorcerer stalking ahead of me. We passed beneath an archway of braided bones and entered the throne room. Between long double rows of black columns, against a twisted mass of metal and stone and dark glimmering crystals, stood the seat of Ghast, a throne cut and compiled from the skeleton of some monstrous ancient creature, unearthed in the wastelands of Terralos. It looked every bit as forbidding as the two figures standing before it on the raised dais. One bore a heavy crown of onyx, with long grey hair flanking a smooth black mask. That must be the king of Terralos.
the Druid Lord himself. The other figure, slightly taller, wore a hood, and his mask bore a demonic leer. The Fiend Prince, no doubt. A third figure approached, wearing no mask. I smiled, relieved to see another face, and a woman at that. But her dark features were sober, and she looked me over without sympathy. Her headdress, twice as tall as the king's crown, was studded with pale gems. "Approach the seat of Ghast," she intoned. I lifted my eyebrows. With the drug haze dissipating, my tongue was as agile as ever. "Why do you people give everything such doleful titles? Seat of Ghast, Cursed Palace, Fiend Prince, Dreadlord." I released a faint chuckle. Humour was usually my backup plan when I was in trouble, my comfort space when I was nervous. But the people around me did not react, except that the black-gloved fingers of the Fiend Prince twitched slightly, as if he couldn't wait to get his filthy hands on me. All my humour drained away. "I did not agree to this marriage," I said. "I do not consent." A low, raspy voice issued from beneath the king's mask. "Your father has given his consent. We do not need yours."
"He doesn't own me. He cannot do this. You have to let me go. I only found out about this at dinner."
The guard's hands closed around my upper arms, and I jerked against them, snapping into fight mode instantly. My father had been wise to drug me. I had achieved top marks in every combat course I'd ever taken. I used the guard's grip for balance as I swung outward with my leg, smashing my foot into the right-hand guard's kneecap. He groaned and bent, and when his grip loosened, I popped my arm free, following up with a quick blow to his throat with the side of my hand. I whirled, swinging the left-hand guard around, slamming his body into a third guard behind us. While they were struggling to right themselves, I faced off with the fourth guard, faking a blow, dodging under his attempted block, and landing a solid kick to his groin. All of that took more breath and effort than usual, thanks to the cursed satiny skirts weighing me down. I hoisted the gown and started to run, but a net of slim green whips curled around my limbs. As soon as they impacted my skin, I was petrified, frozen in place. My body revolved slowly around as the sorcerer dragged me toward the dais, like a fish on a line. My limbs wouldn't obey me, but my mouth was free. I let loose with the most depraved and disgusting of curses, every foul word I knew and some that I invented on the spot. Maybe if I behaved horribly, they would deem me unfit to marry their prince and send me home. No such luck. The sorcerer whipped another cord of magic across my mouth, and it nestled between my lips, burning and buzzing across my tongue. The lines of green light around my body tightened, painful and hot. I tried not to make a sound, but tears pooled in my eyes in spite of my resolve, and I glared through them, hating myself for the weakness. The ceremony that followed was half in common tongue, half in some Terralonian ancestral dialect. Apparently, I was promising reverence and obedience to my husband. I was agreeing never to withhold my body for purposes of pleasure or procreation, never to so much as look at another man, never to leave his side without his permission, all sorts of nonsense. I tried to form words again, to protest, but the burning cord of magic between my jaws thickened, scorching my tongue so sharply I yelped in pain.
"Andreas."
The voice came from the Fiend Prince's mask. At the word, the sorcerer's line of magic thinned again, cooling slightly. It was a welcome mercy, but I doused any fleeting sensation of gratitude. The Fiend Prince was marrying me against my will. A truly kind and good fiancé would have demanded that I be unbound and allowed to speak. When it came time for me to affirm the vows, the woman reciting them paused for half a second, and the sorcerer flexed his magic, bending my neck in the semblance of a nod.
"Assent is given," droned the woman, and moved on to the fiend prince.
He assented with a sharp jerk of his head.
"Assent is given," she repeated, and moved into the final words.
"You are now bound by metal and magic, by ichor and ice, for pain and pleasure, soul to soul and blood to blood."
The king stepped forward, impatience in the hard angles of his shoulders.
"Take her to his bedroom."
"Yes, Dreadlord." The sorcerer headed for a doorway, dragging me along by my magical green leash. As we left the throne room, I heard the king say to his son,
"You must ensure her compliance tonight. Call the physic if you need something to sedate her."
Panic raced along my nerves, and more tears trailed along my cheeks as I felt my own wretched helplessness. How I hated magic! So unfair! Without that advantage on their side, they could not have subdued me so easily.
"Try to uncover the source of their magic."
My father's secret words grated against my mind. Why hadn't he warned me what he was planning? Why hadn't he given me more information, more time, more consideration? The horrible truth of it was that he didn't care enough. That he was willing to give me up for the sake of his precious people, sell me to Terralors, and give me a last-minute half-assed directive to spy on my new husband and his father. Well, I wouldn't be doing any favours for my father, and I'd be damned if I allowed the fiend prince to dose me into compliance tonight.
3. The sorcerer pushed me between a pair of ornately carved ebony doors. Then he kicked me, full in the rear, and I sprawled on my face on the floor, unable to break my fall since my arms were still bound with his magical ropes.
"Brincian scum," he snarled. "Wretched whore. You're not worthy of carrying the heir's seed. Know that if you attempt to bring harm to the fiend prince tonight, I'll slice off some precious little parts of you. You'll never be the same again."
The door slammed, and the magical lines around my body vanished. A low fire glimmering in the grate yielded the room's only light, and its orange glow didn't reach far, because the fiend prince's bedroom was immense. It was so heavily swathed in shadow, I could only guess at its dimensions. The hiss and pop of the flames comforted me, a familiar sound in a room heavy with dark drapery, opulent floral scents, and a carpet so plush that when I sat up, my hands sank into it. It would not be long before the fiend prince came to me. Even if he was reluctant to do so, his father seemed like the type to hurry him to the consummation. Apparently, Terralors was desperate for an heir, though I couldn't think why. The king seemed healthy enough, and the prince was rumored to be a fearsome warrior. Difficult to tell what state they were in with the masks, though. Perhaps they were hiding some terrible, encroaching disease. I shuddered, thinking of sharing a bed with the diseased body of the fiend prince, thinking of scabrous hands crawling over my body. No. No, that could not happen. I lurched to my feet and began hunting through the room, looking for anything I might be able to use as a weapon. The fireplace tools were an obvious choice, but also harder to conceal. Stealth would be my only friend in this endeavour. At last, in a bottom drawer, I located a pretty little jewelled dagger, probably the brightest and most cheerful thing in the room. It lay half concealed by some of the prince's underthings, soft black shorts and one pair of scarlet silken drawers. I pushed those aside and pulled out the dagger, delighted at its feel and craftsmanship. A little light and fragile, perhaps, clearly meant as a decorative piece, but its blade was sharp enough when I tried it against my thumb. It would do the job nicely. The fiend prince's bed matched the scale of the room, A horrifying, haunted castle of a thing, with towering twisted spindles, draped in curtains the colour of ink and blood. A gauzy black negligee lay across the sheets. I couldn't very well climb into the bed in my ridiculous wedding gown, and I would die before I'd put on that bit of silken shadow. I divested myself of the dress and shoes, and slid between the sheets in my corset and lace pantalettes. I'd chosen the bed as the best place for the assault. When the fiend prince entered, he would likely be on the alert, ready to fend off a full charge or a sneak attack from behind the door. Lying on the bed would give him the impression that I'd given in, that I was ready to submit. He would approach me smugly, ready to take his prize, and then I'd give him a surprise instead. Dragging the sheet over myself and renewing my grip on the dagger, I lay still, while my heart thrummed frantic. When would he come? When? Damned prince. He should get his sorry ass in here, and quick. What if he never came? What if I had to wait all night? What if I fell asleep and dropped the dagger and... The door opened, slowly and gradually. Yes, the fiend prince was on the alert. My attack on his guards in the throne room had shown him I was not someone to underestimate. I left my eyes open, only the tiniest of slits, peering through my lashes. I hadn't drawn the bed curtains, so I could make out his dim, distant figure by the door. "It's all right," he said to someone, probably his guards. "She's in bed. Remain just outside and listen in case I call you." Someone voiced a muffled protest, but the prince repeated, "It's all right." He closed the door and heaved a sigh. Fabric shifted as he took off his hooded cape and tossed it over a chair. Boots thumped to the carpet, one after the other. Then the fiend prince walked toward the bed, unlacing his shirt. I let my eyes seal shut. My fingers tensed around the dagger hilt, but I forced my body to relax, to look soft and pliable and non-threatening. I kept my face smooth, as if I was sleeping, and I breathed evenly. For a long moment, there was no sound or movement, only silence and the dark scent of the wine-coloured flowers on the bedside table, and the gentle huff of my own feigned breathing. The fiend prince was just standing there, looking at me. I had only drawn the sheet up part way, so he was likely enjoying the generous view of my breasts. The cups of my corset only hid about 2/3 of my assets, leaving plenty on display. "Take your last looks," I growled internally. "You're about to die." Warm fingers brushed my shoulder. My hand launched at his throat, a vice grip, choking off the air he might use to cry out, and as I lunged upright, I forced him down to the mattress. It was so smooth and sudden, he had no chance to shout before the tip of my dagger pressed to his jugular vein. He'd been surprisingly easy to overcome. Lighter than I expected. Less muscular. Was he not the mighty warrior everyone thought him to be? I couldn't see his face. He still wore the leering mask. Still and quiet, he lay beneath me. Not a hint of fight in him, though his breath wheezed through his constricted throat. "You'll not touch me again," I hissed. "Not ever. Do you understand?" 4. The fiend prince struggled to speak through my chokehold, behind the grated mouthpiece of his mask.
"I was only going to wake you, so I could speak to you."
I eased my grip slightly, and only because he had rebuked the sorcerer who was burning my tongue.
"Liar! Your father wants you to consummate. He told you to drug me if you had to." "I intended no such thing, princess."
Now that he wasn't choking, his voice was young, light, and masculine, in a way that quickened my blood.
I was suddenly conscious that I had ended up astride him, leaning over him, with my breasts surging a little too far out of the confines of my corset.
"Take off your mask," I said.
"That I cannot do."
"Why? Are you so disfigured that your face would make me scream? I'll wager I have more courage and compassion than you think."
"I don't doubt it, but I cannot remove the mask now. Tomorrow, perhaps." I pressed the dagger more firmly to his flesh.
"Now, else you die."
"You would kill me then. Spill my blood here in our bed. On our wedding night." There was a wry, bitter twist to his words. "Did it ever cross your mind that this marriage was not my idea, or my wish, that perhaps I was also taken by surprise and forced to go along with it?"
"You seemed willing enough, when you stood beside your father, the Dreadlord, and gave your consent," I spat.
"Words only," he answered. "They did not reflect my heart or my desire."
"You're only saying this because you want to live."
He sighed heavily. "Believe what you like, and sit on me as long as you like. Now that my shock is fading, I'm becoming very accustomed to your presence." He shifted his hips slightly under me, and I felt the roll of hard flesh as he moved. I had done saucy things with the dull stable boy, so I recognized the shape and feel of that hardness in the prince's trousers. Though, to be honest, the stable boy's piece had been rather on the small side, barely enough to close my hand around. This felt like more, in the best way, and I hated that I was curious what it might look like, feel like.
"Pervert," I said haughtily, as if my own body weren't heating at that very moment.
I bent closer, shifting the dagger so the edge of its blade lay against his voice box. He swallowed, his throat flexing beneath my fingers. "Ah, yes. Lean in a little more. Just like that," he said. "Such a wonderful view." I glanced down, where my chest was spilling out of the corset.
"Damn it. This one wasn't meant to contain so much as to push everything up."
I straightened, adjusting the corset with one hand, keeping the blade pointed toward him, its tip hovering over his heart this time. His shirt lay unlaced, gaping in a wide V, exposing a thin, pale chest. A lean chest, but not a powerful one, not heavily muscled and sculpted like a warrior's body should be. "I like your corset," said the prince contentedly. "But if you need other undergarments or anything else, I'll see that you get it."
"In exchange for what?"
"Well, you've made it clear that I'm not supposed to touch you, though it seems you'll make free touching me wherever and whenever you please. So perhaps we could find some other arrangement. Let's see. My father wants to know that we've consummated our marriage. What if you help me convince him that we have?" I stare down at his leering, masked face.
"Lie to the Dreadlord?
You were about to murder his only son. A small lie seems far more reasonable, don't you think?"
"I..."
"Come, wife. Help a husband out." Instantly, I drove the dagger point through his skin. Just the tip, just enough to release a few beads of blood.
"Don't ever call me wife again."
"Ow!" he said.
"I might have to in public." "What makes you think I will ever agree to appear in public with you?"
"I'm going to kill you and leave your body for your father to find. And then I'll escape and go home."
"How?
How will you find your way through the maze that is the cursed palace? How will you avoid the guards and the sorcerers and the magical wards? How will you traverse the wilderness, cross the mountains and forge the rivers?" "Forgive me, princess, but though you're a skilled fighter, you don't seem like the type to have trekked far on foot through strange lands." I tried to swallow down the uncertainty that rose with his every question.
"Then I will keep you as a hostage and force someone to give me an escort home."
He shook his head. "The instant you cleared the palace grounds, they would only recapture you.
My people have no honor, and would adhere to no bargain they made with you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?